Hi, this is Brian Tarquin, and you're listening to The Guitar Track Show on WFIT 89.5 FM. Today, it's my pleasure to have Gary Hoey, an old friend of mine. And here we are jamming together on that classic Jeff Beck song, El Beca. So I sat down with Gary and we chatted about old times, and he told me the story of how he started to play guitar.
He started playing guitar when I was about 14, obsessed by 16. I auditioned for a guy named Ozzy Osbourne when I was in my 20s. He was the one that bought my ticket there, and I ended up in the top probably seven guys with Zach Wilde and a bunch of other guys, and came close to getting that gig, but I think he picked the right man. Life-changing for me. I mean, I was the biggest Black Sabbath fan growing up. I mean, they were definitely my favorite band. I had every single album. At one point, I know I had 13 or 14 albums, and you know, I had all their records. My friends and I, we actually hitchhiked, you know, pretty far away to go see a Sabbath show back in the 70s. And we had our dungaree, our denim jackets on with the skull. We thought we were badass, and we ended up in Springfield, Massachusetts. If you're born in Boston, that's like the other side of the world, you know? So we went there, and we saw Ozzy and them, and it just was an incredible experience. And then, you know, fast forward 20 years later, I'm now auditioning for him. I'm in the room. We're playing I Don't Know, Crazy Train, you know, a few other songs, and he's standing right in front of me singing and screaming in my face. And I'm going, oh, my God, because I was toward the end of the 900 people they had auditioned. So a lot of people didn't get to actually play with Ozzy. The ones that were toward the end did. So that was incredible for me, you know, just to be in the same room with my hero, my idol. They gave us very specific songs. We knew exactly what we were going to play. They didn't throw any curveballs. they did also expect you to do like a 5-minute unaccompanied guitar solo. And that was a big part of the audition, to just stand there for 5 minutes and shred for a little while, turn the volume down, play a little clean picking chord thing, then do a little classical thing, then dive bomb, then do some blues, and then some rock, you know, that little thing to create a little atmosphere. So I did that. Probably auditioned for Ozzy. I was probably 1987. Zach was the perfect look. Zach knew every Sabbath song. He knew everything. He just knew everything. He knew every solo note for note. He was the guy. I think Ozzy had a real, you know, like instantly, oh my God, there's my Randy. And that caused me to move to California. And then I met my manager, Dave Kaplan, ended up signing to Warner Brothers in the early 90s. And I had a band called Heavy Bones with Frankie Benelli from Quiet Riot. We made a record, and the record completely kind of got crushed by the grunge scene. So we made $500,000 record that flopped. And then the rest after that, I just went to the label. I said, I want to make an instrumental guitar album. Give me $15,000. And I recorded Hocus Pocus and a bunch of my originals. And I just, you know, out of nowhere, we had a top 5 Billboard hit on a $15,000 record. Sold over 150,000 copies, and then sold several hundred thousand more on other records. And now I've sold, you know, definitely over 1 million albums with all my albums combined. And the Christmas series, we did over 350,000. So we did a lot as far as instrumental guitar music. Endless Summer 2 was something I scored in the 94, right after Hocus Pocus, and that was a really amazing thing. I didn't really have any idea what I was getting into, but here I am scoring a surf movie that kind of became like a kind of a cult classic, and it got me, you know, kind of in the world of that surf thing, which I wasn't really a surf guitarist, but I loved that music growing up. I used to listen to Dick Dale and stuff. So it ended up making me, you know, some money for the last 20 years or whatever, because it's just constantly playing. I realize the value of doing film and TV music, as you know, because you do it. It's something that's a gift that keeps on giving. Those are the things that have really kept me in this business, Brian, for all these years. The fact that I've been still kind of surviving in the business, you know, not being a pop guy. It's been those, you know, the relationships at radio and being diverse and keep doing as much as I can.
I love the Ozzy story, man. I wish I could have been there. Now, we can't talk to Gary without talking about Hocus Pocus, that great remake he did from the classic band Focus. Man, it's a great story of how that took off.
You know, when a song hits the radio, if the phones don't light up or people don't react or they don't send in an email saying, who is that, it doesn't really take off. You know, it has to grow legs on its own eventually. And that's what Hocus Pocus did. It just freaking took off. And it was like, I literally remember the first or second radio station that ever played the single. It was WDHA in New Jersey. One Hocus Pocus off a cassette. And they said the phones just blew up. And then it spread to 3 stations, then 4 stations, then 5 stations. Then it just went crazy. And, you know, I was on Warner Brothers record. I had the biggest machine behind me. You know, we were flying first class. We were, you know, eating 5-star restaurants every night. We were wining and dining every DJ. Felt incredible. I remember going station to station down in the south, and I'd meet DJs and I'd play my guitar for them. And then by the end of the hour, they would say, I'm adding your record right now on the air. They would say, we're adding you. And those kind of things just don't happen anymore. One came too much of a business, I guess. It was amazing. And the timing was, you know, it was like grunge music. You know, we were like going, what the hell is going on? But it somehow hit a chord with all these radio DJs that either grew up in the 70s listening to Hocus Pocus, but yet we kind of gave it a twist. People of that generation were saying, hey, this is cool, man. When did you write this song? And I was going, wow, I wish I wrote it, you know? I just thought it was a good idea to do a remake to bring people into the music, and maybe they would listen to some of my songs, you know? Well, Hocus Pocus ended up making like the top 100 most played songs of the year, Billboard. It was really got a ton of airplay, so I bought somebody a pool.
Man, that brings back so many memories of the Sunset Strip. I first saw that video at the Whiskey. I wanted to ask Gary, who really inspired him to become a guitarist?
Guys like Jeff Beck, you know, when I heard like Blow by Blow, those albums, Wired, There and Back, those three were the big ones for me. Of course, Beckola, you know, all that stuff too. But that stuff, Aldo Meola, he kind of grabbed my ear for a long time. I was like, wow, Aldo Meola is like amazing. Of course, Steve Vai, Satriani, all those guys, Eric Johnson. You know, it was just drawing from that. And then going back to that, it was just songs and melody. And I was in a band kind of singing. Growing up, I was in Heavy Bones. We had a lead singer. You know, our music was kind of like Aerosmith a little bit. You know, it was bluesy rock. Grew up listening to melody. So when I started writing a lot of instrumental music, I kept my melodies fairly simple. And I think that's one thing that helped me break through. The way Satriani did, he kind of touched people in a way. And I did the same thing because I always thought of a vocalist. Like, okay, I'm not going to sing right now, but the guitar sort of has to be the vocal. And don't confuse a melody from a solo. Don't just write a song that's an excuse to play a guitar solo. Write a song because there's a real melody there. And something to do, or a cool chord progression, or one thing that makes it interesting, and then go from there. That was sort of the foundation of how I tried to write instrumental music, and it's really cool because I think instrumental music, you know, it stands the test of time. There are no lyrics for people to sort of listen to, so the music creates a story for them. I've seen some positive things from it. You know, like college kids email me all the time saying, "Dude, my SATs are killer because I listen to you when I'm studying." And they say there's no words, so it doesn't distract me, but it inspires me, and I go, "Wow, that's so cool." So it doesn't matter if they listen to my music or Steve Vai's music or somebody else. It's still just this kind of cool thing that gets in your bone. You create the message from it, you know.
Gary's very positive about the future of music and its ever-changing technologies.
You know, it's a new beginning. It's a new thing. There's also exciting horizons for artists and musicians that can literally create music and get it out to the world, which you couldn't do before. You and I could not do that in the 70s. We didn't have a record deal. We had no chance of anyone ever hearing what we did. There's a lot of promise for what's going on right now. I love the fact that we can make records in our house. Look at you and I. We played on an album together more than once, and I'm in my house, and you're in your house. And I wish I could hang out with you in the studio and have a beer and everything. Sometimes with life, you know, you just have to go, well, listen, I can do it right now, and this hour, you know.
I only have one thing to say, Gary. The dude is righteous. Gary is such a talented and great guitarist. We love you, Gary. Peace.